Hello, and welcome to the Flight for the Human Spirit podcast. I'm Michael Combs. So glad you're here with us today. I get goosebumps just thinking about it. And I'm sitting in, I think the outside temperature is 110 today. So I'm sitting in the air-conditioned car in the heat. But even so, I sure get those goosebumps thinking about the accomplishments to share on this podcast. Well, we did it. 49 states down. 49 states. I'm joined today by the infamous, the all-knowing, the ever-radiant and effervescent Michelle. Hi, Michelle.
Hello.
Michelle, we did it. 49 states down.
We did. And he didn't say where we are, by the way, that it's 110. It's the Mojave Desert. We're on our way to Las Vegas to catch a flight home.
Yeah, we are. Actually, I'll fill in the blanks, but we're traveling right now from Lake Havasu City to Las Vegas, Nevada. Lake Havasu City, Arizona to Las Vegas, Nevada. And right now we're passing a group of motorcycles. And kind of an interesting looking bunch.
Like toughies.
Yeah, they are definitely toughies if they're out here in this kind of heat.
Might be the real kind.
But they all have European flags on their bikes. Now, we had some guys going by us earlier that had Swiss flags. And they passed these guys up. But very, very interesting. I tell you, this is no man's land out here, isn't it?
Boy, that's for sure. It's sure barren. I don't know. I was just looking up the Oregon Trail on Wikipedia to just see where they went and if they came through here, and I don't know how they survived it.
Yeah, you think of just, we've talked about how long you could survive if you were to start just walking this kind of heat without water, backup water, and oh man. Unbelievable. Okay, when we recorded the last podcast, we were in Seattle. So let me bring you up to date real quick. From Seattle, we took off to Portland, Oregon. And I tell you, Portland was a fantastic stop for us. We stopped at the Aurora State Airport. And the FBO there was Aurora State Aviation. And Michelle, they were perfect, weren't they?
Yeah, they were really great. Very warm, and the lineman was fantastic, just really interested. It had all sorts of recommendations for us. They were happy to take care of us that night.
Oh, they were great. So thank you so much, Aurora State Aviation. You really made that Portland stop what it was for us. They topped us off. They paid for our meal that night. And of course, hangared Hope One for the night. Yeah, gave us a car. It was just fantastic. The next morning we got up and we had met a fan there who came out to meet us, and that was a great experience. I always love meeting fans. They've just made this trip, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Absolutely do. Keeps us going. It's like food.
Yeah, it really is. It's food for the soul. You know, when you meet a fan that some of you I know this flight better than I have, as far as some of the details of this flight and what day was what. I mean, I was talking to a guy the other day, and I was thinking, I was talking about one of the flight days. I said, I think it was right around 35 to 40, and he said, yeah, it was flight day 38. And boy, it's just fantastic to see that type of fan response. It's just, I love it. When we went to leave that morning, there had been a plane crash that night that we had arrived.
Yeah, like an hour after we left.
Yeah, in fact, we saw the guy just flying and circling, and apparently it was an aircraft that he had just finished building, had about 10 hours on it. And it sounded as though he lost control. We're not quite sure what happened, but he did clip the corner of a hangar, the top corner of a hangar, and cartwheeled the aircraft as it hit the ground. Thank God he's okay.
Alive.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know if he's okay.
Yeah, that's a good point, but it's...
A alive is okay, I guess.
Yeah,
for
I
pilots,
guess so.
It is.
No kidding. Yeah, I'm not sure what to say there. Taking off from Aurora State Airport, we flew on to Yakima, Washington. And what we had decided to do, and I think I shared this on the last podcast, but we decided to finish the rest of the route backwards. See, now here's these toughy motorcycles passing us. I don't know what the deal is. But either way, there they go. Now he's slowing down, okay?
What's that about?
I don't know.
We get boxed in so we can be robbed. I know that's not true.
From Portland, we... sorry, I'm a little distracted because these guys passed us and now they're slowing way down. So I'm not sure what the deal is. Yeah. So a little bit distracted here. But we're going on with this podcast, okay? So you can hear every moment, every
yeah, if we get kidnapped, you guys know where we
are. That's right.
I say, Mike, just go around and go... put it in a go 100 and pass the heck out of them.
Well, I'm in a Nissan Versa and
go max speed of 70.
I'm drafting behind the motorcycles right now. I'm drafting here. I'm glad for the help. Okay, so we took off from Portland, Oregon, and flew onward to Yakima. Now that flight to Yakima was absolutely beautiful. We saw Mount Hood. Mount Adams and, of course, Mount St. Helens. Now, we flew right by Mount Adams and got some gorgeous pictures of it. It was very interesting. In fact, I was talking to someone the other day at the air show that these mountains here in the Washington area, Washington and Oregon area, were some of the most incredible mountains because they're just volcanoes or some active, some extinct volcanoes that are just sticking up off of the landscape. They're just absolutely beautiful and so majestic. And Mount Adams, as I said, we flew fairly close to and got some great shots of it. Onward to Yakima, and you know, after we were on the other side of Mount Adams, we were right there in the Washington Desert. And boy, beautiful. Beautiful change of scenery and just an unusual change of topography and climate. Yakima, we talked to a fan there and had a good time. Not going to say too much about the FBO there because we parked the plane. Normally they'll come out and show you where they want it parked, but we parked it and went inside and the guy was just sitting there behind the counter just kind of hanging out. I'm not sure what he was doing. So we kind of fueled up and got the heck out of there. But onward we went to Spokane. Spokane was a fantastic stop.
That was a cool airport, just flying in the whole mountain range and the ridge. That was cool.
Yeah, it was. Spokane, after we had flown over the mountains, there was a TV crew there and some fans. In fact, one of our fans had topped off our fuel tank.
So nice.
It's just, again, the fans of this flight are what really keep us going. And we just thank every one of you for your contributions, whether it's $10 that you've paid as a donation or to offer $10 to put your name in the Hope One notebook so your name will be memorialized through history. Whatever it is, we're just very thankful for the fans who have been there to top us off or help with a hotel room or whatever it might be. This has not been a cheap, inexpensive, I should say, project, and every little bit helps.
We're immensely. Laughing today that we started with nothing and we're ending with a little less than nothing.
That's right. From Spokane, onward we flew to Missoula. And Missoula, oh man, again... what a great, great stop that was. Flying over those mountains were absolutely unbelievable. Bob Warner and I were talking about not having too many places to land as we were flying over the Canadian Rockies and on into Alaska. Flying from Spokane into Missoula was the same thing, unless you wanted to fly and follow along the highway, which is always good advice if you want to play it safe. Landing at Missoula, Minuteman Aviation was there to greet us, and oh, again,
I tell ya,
these guys were unbelievable. The response that we had from the folks here. All right, I'm gonna pass these motorcycles here. I'm not
sure. They were so nice. They had created a big poster for us, welcoming the Flight for the Human Spirit. Came running out to the plane, red carpets on both sides, and just treated us like royalty. And they really understood our mission and what we were trying to achieve. And gosh, I can't even tell you how much it was nice to be received that way. And they were a real highlight for me.
Oh man, no kidding. Thank you so much, Minuteman Aviation. And likewise, hooked us up with a courtesy car for the night. Boy, it was... Oh man, I tell you, it was just so welcome to be in Missoula, Montana. Now, it's interesting because we had talked... That FBO and I had talked before the flight had even started, just on how they wanted us to be there, and they were looking forward to us coming, and they did not disappoint in any way. I tell you, it was everything and more. They even had our name on the chalks, Flight for the Human Spirit,
right.
On the chalks,
yeah.
With the date that we landed there. And, oh man, I tell you,
that's so cool.
Some of you FBOs, and I know you're listening as well, thank you so much for your warm welcomes as well.
Yeah.
It's really made us feel good when we compare it to some places such as Boise, Idaho, which was one of the lowest stops as far as welcomes, to Missoula, Montana, which was just a fantastic one as far as FBO welcomes. You know, it just shows how you do your business. You treat us like that. I know how you treat your customers.
Yeah.
And it just makes it so easy to recommend FBOs and airports, which I've done. I say, okay, if you're flying into here, go to this airport and be sure to go to this FBO. And I know that you guys are getting business from us because I talk about you guys all the time. And I just thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, exactly.
We had a good time in Missoula. It was a very short time, but off we went. Flying onward to the last scheduled stop of the Flight for the Human Spirit, which was Boise, Idaho. And it was just kind of funny the way it had worked out, because the last scheduled stop in the continental U.S. was to be Bellingham, Washington, before we departed to fly up to Alaska. But because we needed to... rearranged the route to make sure that we got to Canada and back as quickly as we could, that made Idaho the final one of the continental U.S. states. So it was nice landing at Boise.
Yeah.
We felt a little emotional
touching
down, because it was just to think how far we've flown and that we have reached 49 states. And I couldn't help but think about all the people that said that we couldn't do this, or this aircraft wouldn't make it, or the Rotax wouldn't make it, and on and on.
Bet against you.
yeah, literally bet against me. It just felt good. It was a nice sense of accomplishment. I know the flight wasn't over, still isn't over at this point, but such a nice, nice sense of accomplishment.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to walk into the FBO and just, like, there was no reception at all, okay? Like, none. and it was so wild to just walk in there and just think, we just accomplished something pretty amazing. And there's nobody here to share this with us. And it was a weird letdown. And honestly, had there been 100 fans, I don't know if I would have felt that much different, but... I think so.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I would. It was just very anticlimactic, and I think it's just after something that's taken so much effort and so much love and care, and I don't know. It just was an interesting place for it to end. I kept thinking, I wish we could go back to Minuteman and call Missoula our last stop. That'd just be so much better. But I knew we had Lake Havasu ahead of us.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, on the flip side of this, Michelle and I talked about this the other day, it was we had one of our best news reporters in Boise. He ended up to be the night news anchor and was very, very excited about the flight, was very, very enthusiastic, thoroughly understood what we were doing and why we were doing it and wanted to cover it. And I did put the link on our Facebook fan page, but I thank that reporter for Fox News and that Boise Fox station for picking up the torch and running with it, because the question that we were talking about was, which is more important, to have a nice reception of people or a nice news report
that reaches more people?
And I think we both agreed that the news report certainly is the better, although, as we said earlier, fans are what keep you going.
Yeah, it really does. I was so relieved to see the news crew come. It was like, okay, all right, this ends the way that we're kind of accustomed to. And honestly, it's not about the glory. It's about spreading the message that it's never ever too late to follow your dreams. We're so passionate about that, and it was just nice for it to end with such a solid report on his part. And maybe that'll be something I hope that goes down in history as well, that report.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that ended the route, the scheduled part of the route. Now the next goal, and it's the goal that we had kept out there for months and months and months, since actually before the flight had begun, was to be in Lake Havasu City, Arizona on the 25th of September. So now the project was to get Hope One to the air show in Lake Havasu City, because they were having an air show on the 25th, and I was the guest speaker. So it's pretty important to be there. So the weather the next day was too windy to fly, so we stayed an extra day in Boise. Yeah, too windy. Who would have guessed? But I'm glad, because I tell you, some of those gusts in Utah were gusting 35 to 40 knots that next day. There's no way we could have flown in that weather. But the day we flew was just absolutely gorgeous. We took off and flew. You know, I talked about the mountains between Spokane and Boise. I'm sorry, Spokane and Missoula. The mountains between Missoula and Boise were every bit as treacherous. It was just a funny feeling constantly looking for places to land. When you're flying over the desert, as we're driving through now, you could find a lot of places to land. It may not be the smoothest landing in spots, but you could certainly find a lot of places to set it down. Whereas flying over country like that, it was just, boy, a lot of trees, a lot of rocks, steep topography. You know, where most of the time the best place seemed to be in the river, at the bottom of some of the canyons that we were flying through.
You know, I think that was the most uncomfortable I've been through the entire flight. The most nervous I'd been through the entire flight, which is just kind of funny. I mean, I was looking for, I kept calling out places where you could, I see some place you might be able to land. And just making sure that we had options, but I don't remember ever feeling that uncomfortable, nervous about what we were flying over until then. Just Missoula to Boise, that's it.
Yeah, but that was a long flight. We had headwinds that entire way, which slowed us down quite a bit.
We did have
flight following, and he said, okay, you've cleared this such and such airspace, so you can go direct if you want. And it was a personal choice whether to make that turn or not, and we've certainly made that decision several other times during the flight across the country, and I still stand behind it. You know, it was... I had felt very comfortable with Hope One, and there were still enough options with that territory there that we were flying over that we could have found some place to land at any moment, which which is good. And it, I guess after flying over Canada into Alaska, you just kind of get used to it. Yeah.
He definitely got more bold after that. It was interesting because that's my first time back in a plane for a while.
Oh, that's interesting.
And to see that he was flying a little different than he was before. And,
how so?
Well, just you had a lot more confidence. I definitely saw that confidence. It's like, I don't know, like Alaska was your growing up point, you know? Your bar mitzvah. You get over that hump and everything's easy from there. They seem like wimpy mountains, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they did seem like wimpy mountains. It's like, yeah, we could land there.
But you have to understand that I was used to like flying over Kentucky and Florida. This is, you know, the highest you'd taken me was Cody, Wyoming, like up around Wyoming, where we kind of skirted the mountains. That was the first time I'd actually really flown over any.
Oh, that's very interesting. How did it feel to fly? Because you'd been out of the plane for, what, 5 weeks or so, we were talking,
yeah.
You know, over a month. Ooh, a little windy here. How did it feel to be back in the plane again?
It felt like home. I really was surprised. I mean, here I am, and those of you who don't know me, I've called myself the reluctant participant a lot of the way, and I really missed being there. I missed the freedom of just being able to get up and go someplace different, and I don't know, just the movement of the whole trip, always being constant movement. As much as you hate it some days, maybe not hate is a good word, but where you dread it some days. I missed it so much, and it was so fun to be out and exploring the world again.
It was great having you back in the plane.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say this publicly to the world, since we have, what, 500 to 750 people a day listening. It was great having you back, Michelle. As most people know, the last month or so, most of the last month, I'd been flying solo over the desert southwest part of the country where we are now, and it was certainly the best decision from the interest of safety to have made, just because of the winds and because of the density altitude,
yeah.
And the high temperatures, and of course ran into some of the monsoon moisture and in New Mexico and Arizona, and you know, it's just, if I had to do it again, I would have made the same decision once again. But it was wonderful having you back.
Thank you so much. Have you explained what density altitude is to your fans? Because remember, I'm the non-technical person, so.
Oh, good. Okay, density altitude, in a nutshell, is calculated based on the temperature, the outside temperature, as well as the humidity. The higher the temperature, the higher the humidity, the higher the density altitude is. And the higher the density altitude, it just is a calculated altitude.
It's like a simulated altitude. Like, you're taking off from here, but it's going to feel like you're taking off at 9,500 feet. So that's all it is.
Exactly. Like Grand Canyon, for instance, when I took off from there, the density altitude was, I think, 9,400 that day.
That's crazy.
So you're starting out at 9,400 with a 16-knot gust. And you know, you're hoping to climb as quickly at least 2,000 feet above the ground as you can. It's obviously the higher that you're starting from an elevation viewpoint,
the slower
the climb's going to be.
Yeah, which is the worry.
And you know, to carry that just one step further, the heavier the aircraft is, the slower it will climb. So by just me being in Hope One, it climbed like a rocket, like it typically does, at just about any altitude, which was great. But anyway, it was great having you. Boy, it was great having you back.
I'm so glad.
Okay, so we flew from Boise to Salt Lake City, and that was a fun flight.
I've never seen Salt Lake from that angle before.
Yeah, the Great Salt Lake was cool to see. So we're out of the main mountains. Of course, we flew over some other mountains, but you know, we were out of kind of that high altitude Rocky Mountain threat. Then we're over the Great Salt Lake, and we took a diagonal course across the lake. But it was just so beautiful. It was kind of a pink color from the sky. It was beautiful. Flying into Salt Lake City is an unusual and not an experience. Yeah, challenging experience. It's not an experience for a pilot that's squeamish to who wants to shy away from radios or being told to stay at a specific altitude or whatever it might be. Yeah. But you had your taste of that, so that was kind of fun that you got to see what.
Well, and you were saying it was the toughest airport that you've ever flown into, where they just have so much going on, and you have to listen sharp, because they give very specific instructions: fly along this line for this until you see the red barn, then turn left. Then So, by the way, they do that from not just. They do it in the sky, not just on the ground when they give directions. Like, you see the McDonald's, turn left.
Yeah, we were supposed to look for the barn and then make our turn. Yeah. So, it was, that was a fun part of the
Yeah, there were so many planes.
The Salt Lake City area is just such a busy area anyway, and they have to be that strict to make sure that everybody stays safe. Landing in Salt Lake City was, again, a wonderful experience. We had a fan there. There was a TV crew.
Oh, yeah.
We stopped at Million Air, and I tell you, it's like going home. I love the folks at Million Air in Salt Lake City. It really does feel like going home. I love pulling up there, and the lineman immediately came out. He's like, well, how far have you gone so far? I mean, he remembered me from when we were there the first time. And, I just love it.
That was fun.
It was just fantastic. They topped us off. Thank you, Millionaire.
Gave us t-shirts.
Gave us t-shirts from Millionaire in Salt Lake City, which, again, will be a part of the exhibit once Hope One is retired. It will be a part of the museum exhibit. Anything that we've gathered along the way. That's a non-consumable item.
You mean we can't wear those t-shirts?
No, we can't wear those t-shirts.
What?
You can wear yours. I'm not wearing mine.
What?
Anyway, thank you, Millionaire. It was interesting. When we took off from Boise, you weren't feeling too good.
No, not at all. I thought I didn't think I was as bad as I was until we got up in the air. And Mike kept asking me, well, will your ears be all right? Because I just had a little cold. I didn't even think about it. Well, we had those little Clarity Aloft headphones where it actually sticks in your ear like a hearing aid. Well, it's designed like a hearing aid where it sticks actually down in the tube, and then the foam expands, you know. And oh my gosh, my ears were crackling and popping, and I just kept getting sicker and sicker. And by the time we got to Salt Lake, I was just wondering if I really should continue on. But then I started to feel better. I just took a few Excedrin and had some cough drops, and I started to feel a little bit better. But I really should have stayed in Salt Lake, I think.
Yeah, hindsight. You're feeling better, so it's like, okay, there's one more stop to St. George, which was our stop for the night.
Yeah, I just thought I could do that.
Yeah, another 2.5-hour flight or so.
Yeah.
And, of course, we had the headwinds. And so taking off, we got out of the Salt Lake City airspace area and were able to just fly. But, boy, it was bumpy. And it was just not a good flight when your passenger, your co-pilot's not feeling good, too.
Well, the sad part is the bumpiness bothered you way more than it bothered me. And you still are saying that. I keep reassuring you that was not my issue. But I ended up having some stomach problems, and I ended up telling Mike, I think we need to land before we get there because I'm not feeling well at all. And he couldn't find an airport.
So. Of course, we're in the middle of nowhere at that point. It's like, land here, okay.
I'm coming up with backup plans. Okay. All right. If we don't get to stop, then this is what's going to occur, and
exactly.
This is what I'll do. And we both had our own backup plans secretly. We didn't share it with each other.
Not until we got on the ground. Because
yeah.
We didn't want to entertain those ideas, that's for sure.
No.
But there was one airport that we flew over, but there were no facilities there at all. In fact, there were no airplanes there at that airport. Very interesting. So
I just got myself to go to sleep, and that worked out.
It did. So we landed at St. George, which is just a beautiful area. Oh, I love that. St. George area is just so picturesque from the sky and from the ground. Touched down at St. George, and it was a nice, comfortable landing. For all the winds we'd gone through, there were no winds on the ground. And St. George is kind of notorious for the rollers around it, the roller winds, and we didn't have to face those at all. Not at all. So it was just, oh yeah, it was very nice. Stopped at St. George, got Michelle's feet up and got some food in her and got up the next morning and you were not feeling any better.
No, I was much worse.
You were much worse, that's right. So the only stop left, my friend, is we had to get Hope One from St. George to Lake Havasu City, which was about a 2-hour flight, if I remember right. So I flew that one solo, brought it into Lake Havasu City, which was, oh man, such a fantastic experience. So rewarding, I just, I don't know how to explain. It was just an amazing experience to think that we made it after knowing that we had to be there in Lake Havasu City, and that was kind of our goal point for us to be able to stage for Hawaii from there. It was just a wonderful experience. Now, and it's important to mention here, Michelle, and I didn't know this at the time, I just had my rough calculated estimates, but it was 23,542 miles from Salina, Kansas. 150 stops that we've made in 49 states. Now, to be a sanctioned around the world trip is 22,868 miles, if
I
remember right.
That's so cool.
So it was further than around the world.
Boy, oh boy. Really proud of you.
Well, I'm proud of Hope One. Yeah. I tell you, it's been, if you've listened to these podcasts, you know that the only problems we've had have been very minimal. Such as a flat front tire in Kitty Hawk, and likewise a problem with our navigation systems going into Tulsa, and then another flat front tire in Des Moines. No.
No, Dubuque.
Dubuque, sorry.
Da, 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 da.
Des Moines, Dubuque. Boise.
Today, Gina.
Sorry about that. Got 150 of these to remember. And we're not done yet. So, anyway, I tell you, I was greeted by Dante and his crew there at Havasu Air Center, and they are a fantastic, top-notch, first-class FBO in every way. Dante, I know you're listening, my friend, and thank you so much for how you've welcomed the Flight for the Human Spirit and how you've let us become the, or let you, or offered to let you become the staging point for our Hawaii part of the mission. So there we are at Lake Havasu City with Hope One. I rented a car, came back to St. George, and I tell you, it was the first time I'd driven on a road trip for forever. And it just felt good. Just felt good to hit the open road. Boy, I tell you, life is good. Life is good when you accomplish your dreams. And I hope each and every one of you listening can experience that feeling over and over and over again of accomplishing those dreams that you set out to do, whatever it might be. And we'll talk about some of those things on some future podcasts. We've got some great topics coming. Got back up. We got you back in the car the next day and got you down to Lake Havasu City.
Went to Vegas in between.
I'm sorry. We did. We drove to Vegas and spent a week in Vegas.
Yeah, because it was a lot less expensive than going to Lake Havasu.
Yeah, that's true. And a little bit shorter, so it was nice having that time in Vegas.
Yeah, good fun.
Yeah, it was just great to not worry about flying, and I did go for an 8-mile walk one day.
You got sick right after your 8-mile walk.
I did. Yeah, it was that night. Several rules that I had regarding the possibility of getting ill while traveling all around the country. Were very simple: to eat mainly at chain restaurants, because I thought if I ate at local restaurants, then you know I might have a more likely opportunity to get sick from food poisoning or food poisoning.
No, don't say that.
Yeah, yeah, really? I hadn't even thought of that. The second rule I had, and it's very simple: don't eat fish unless you're by a coast. And I broke both of those rules by having a crab enchilada at a local Mexican restaurant and paid for it. Paid for it by getting food poisoning. Pretty bad. It was, yeah, pretty nasty. So it was nice to have that cleared, and you were starting to feel better, and off we went to from Vegas to Lake Havasu. Beautiful, beautiful place on the planet. The London Bridge is there, which is a bridge in London that they had dismantled and rebuilt at Lake Havasu City. And Lake Havasu City, I think, was founded in the mid-60s or so.
Yeah, 64.
So, yeah, 64. So it was, it's just a cool place to go. We had a nice, nice hotel room there, and I was a judge for a canoe race, and then spoke at the air show, and that was, Dante, thank you once again for having me come in and yeah. speak. That was just one of the highlights of the trip itself, was to be there, to speak to those kids. We had, what, 150 kids or more who had been bused in for a field trip from Phoenix. And, boy, that was just, I don't know, I love kids. And it was just great seeing the kids. I had some very good fans.
You had a after, little girl that was like, you were her boyfriend. She just wanted to hug. She told her mommy, can I go and hug him? And she would not leave Mike alone. She kept looking at him, staring at him, hugging him.
She was, yeah, so she's cute. She's my friend, let me tell you. I just loved it. And I don't know, I just, one thing we wanted to do with the Flight for the Human Spirit is really incorporate a lot of schools across the country.
Oh, yeah.
And we didn't have that opportunity to do that, so I
not
really want
to
reach out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to reach out and really fill in that hole. So that we can accomplish that part of this mission as well. Okay, so wrapping up here. Hope One is now in Lake Havasu City, staged for the Hawaii mission. Michelle and I are driving from Lake Havasu City to Las Vegas, as we said, and we jump on a commercial flight tomorrow morning.
Commercial
airline flight tomorrow morning to fly back home. Oh, again, there's those goosebumps. It's going to be an adjustment for me. In fact, we were talking to some friends, Bob and Noel, just as far as the adjustment that it's going to take to go from this whirlwind life that I've had of living in hotels and driving rental cars and on to being at home and not having to think about flying. It's been interesting. And I'll share more of this on the next podcast, but it's been very interesting adjusting to the part of my life now over the last week that's been out of Hope One. Every day until yesterday morning, I woke up thinking about flying, thinking about the weather, or thinking, oh, I've got to fly it from Montana today, or I've got to fly it from here to this point to that point. And it's just been so ingrained and just in tune with the weather and on. It's been an interesting...
He said he wakes up... Sorry, I interrupted you. He said he wakes up with the sweaty palms. And that, I didn't realize that you had that for so much of the trip, the sweaty palms. And what was the other thing that you say? It's just like a little bit of anxiety?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of it's just the responsibility of this trip, just to do it right,
yeah.
You know. And, I'm definitely a better pilot than I was when I started. And, of course, anybody would be.
Yeah.
After landing at 150 airports and seeing the topography and flying over mountain ranges, it's just been unbelievable. Boy, it's just really been unbelievable. So it's nice now to have my brain a little quieter.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go home and just work on the last piece of this puzzle as far as how to get Hope One to Hawaii. And we will definitely be talking to you about that. I just need to look at some of my notes and some of my emails. And if you think that this Hawaii portion of the trip is ready to go, it's not.
No. I don't have much at all.
No, and that's Unfortunately, I've had to devote so much attention just for flying from one day to the next, and making sure that we could get from Salina to Lake Havasu, which we have. I mean, we've flown further than around the world. Now we're going further,
yep.
And we will do this. That seems so easy compared to what we've accomplished with the Flight for the Human Spirit. But if you have ideas, thoughts, someone that you can contact to get Hope One over there and back, then please call that person. Have that person call me. You call me. I'll call that person. Let's email. Let's just work together to make this happen.
Let's shake some trees.
Absolutely.
We can do this.
We can do this, and we will do this, my friend. So with that, I'm going to let you go for now. You're up to date. I'll update this podcast after I get home and get settled a little bit. I really want to have Bob Warner on with me so that we can talk about his impressions of Alaska and Hawaii, or Alaska and Canada. Yeah, or Hawaii too. Maybe he'll be there. So for now, believe me, my friend, I meant that when I said I want you to have that experience of accomplishing things in your life, and that great, great experience of doing so. I can't tell you enough how important that is to me to make sure that you get there. Okay, so remember, if I can fly, bless you, if I can fly, what can you do?
Yeah.
And believe me, I've heard some of the crazy things that you can do. And it's been pretty fun, and it's exciting that that the Flight for the Human Spirit has been that motivation, that incentive for you. So, until next time, take care of yourself, and I'll see you
in the sky.
In the sky.